You're listening to Upon Further Review, presented by Coors Light on the official Raiders podcast network. Here's your host, Eddie Pascal.
Raider Nation, what is going on? Eddie Pascal and Engineer Jim here in Las Vegas, Nevada, where, boy, the Raiders have lost a heartbreaker to the Miami Dolphins. It doesn't get much rougher than this. 26-25, losing on a last-second field goal. And helping us break it all down is the legend himself, Brent Musburger. And, Brent, I guess we should just start on that final play. From your vantage point at the stadium, I know very similar to ours, what did you see on that play where Fitzpatrick had the face mask and ends up connecting deep with his receiver?
Fitz magic. I mean, what can I say? I've never seen anything quite like that. His head was being yanked off by Arden Key, who grabbed the face mask. And then when he launched the ball, my first inclination was that ball is going to go out of bounds or fall incomplete. And then suddenly we see a wide receiver wide open. He's been released, catches the ball, and then they tack on the 15-yard penalty. I have never seen a tougher loss for a team in the National Football League, as in ever.
And you know what's funny about that, Brendan? And I agree with you 100%, where, I mean, you're looking at a game in heartbreaking ways to lose a game. That's about the definition of heartbreaking. But I think what's kind of surprising to me is that, by and large, prior to that moment, it felt like the Raiders defense had put together a pretty decent game, a pretty decent 3.5 quarters. And obviously, you and I both know that this defense is far from perfect, but it really did feel like prior to that drive, and I guess really prior to Fitzmagic coming into the mix, they seemed to be playing a better brand of football under Rod Marinelli tonight.
I would agree with that. I think they made play after play, and they forced Tua out of the game, and they brought in Fitzpatrick, and it appeared as though they had him beaten too until the miracle ending occurred. But I want to go back to your point, because I think it's a very important one. The youngster on the corner, Damon Arnett, who released the receiver over there on that side, you're asking a lot of an inexperienced corner. He has to make a decision in that situation, and he released the receiver, and it was a very tough defeat. And had a veteran corner been there, and the Raiders have had Hall of Fame corners throughout their career, those guys would have made probably a different decision. They would probably have not released him, would have stayed with him. But the youngster, you know, the play call was the play call, cover two, and so he did what he was supposed to do in that situation. But I did think that the defense honestly played one of its better games of the last couple of months. I thought they were on top of things. Oh, there was one big touchdown run in which they missed three tackles. That was, until that play that set up the winning field goal, that was probably their worst play of the night. But overall, I thought they played with inspiration, even though they were without a couple of their starters, especially Cleland Furl, who'd been improving this year. So I thought it was a solid performance, but a loss is a loss. And this one was a very tough one.
And going back to Damon real quick, Brent, I mean, is that a moment that, as unfortunate as it is, and as, you know, obviously coming in the worst possible moment for this defense, where that's just a learning experience for Damon? I mean, like you said, he's a young guy. I mean, he's a guy that we hope has all the talent in the world, is going to get better from this. But like you said, in that situation, is that just something that he has to know better than not to release on that receiver in that situation?
Yeah, it's something that as he gets more experience, you know, he paid attention to whatever the call was, and he thought that was what he was supposed to do, was to release him, and clearly it wasn't what he was supposed to do. And hopefully he learns from it, you know. And then, of course, the face mask penalty added the 15 yards to it, and basically then it became game, set, and match.
You know, switching sides of the football, Brent, where we look at what the Raiders did tonight on offense, and heading into this game, the big question was surrounding the quarterback. Who was it going to be? Was it going to be Derek Carr? Was it going to be Marcus Mariota? Was it going to be a combination of the both of them? Derek Carr gets the nod. He finishes his night 21 of 34 for 336 yards and a touchdown. But we look at his line, and as incredible as it is, the struggles for this team on third down speak for themselves. 0 for 10 on third down is not going to get it done in the National Football League. But I think, all things considered, Derek really did play a very nice game considering the circumstances. And I don't think there's anyone in that stadium tonight, Brent, who would agree, who would say that Derek was operating at 100%.
No, that was, yes, you're absolutely right. He was not completely 100%. I would like to see going forward, some kind of a plan. Well, there's one game left because they were eliminated from the playoffs tonight with that setback. I would have liked, honestly, to have seen a package with Marcus Mariota inside the 10-yard line, just because Marcus puts a lot of pressure on because he rolls hard to the outside, and running is one of his strengths. And maybe, you know, next year they'll have a package in the red zone for Mariota to come in and help Carr out in those situations.
You know, I agree with you, because we were talking up in the box where I think in that 2-minute drill at the end of the half for the Raiders, I think it would be very interesting to have Marcus Mariota run that 2-minute drill, essentially for all the reasons that you laid out, where we all know Derek isn't mobile at this moment dealing with the groin injury, and Mariota gives you a different look. So maybe is that... I know there's only one game left, obviously, because as you said, the Raiders are eliminated, but I wonder if you're John Gruden, if headed next week into Denver, you say, hey, let's give him a red zone package and just see what number 8 can do.
Yeah, sure. Why not? You know, you've got nothing to lose. Mariota signed a 2-year contract, if I recall correctly. So you've got him next year, and you can use him in a red zone and some certain plays. Marcus is very good at certain plays. I'm not taking any away from Derek Carr. He's the number one quarterback. He's the franchise guy. He showed a lot of heart by coming out tonight. I watched him work out hard before the game for about an hour, demonstrating to the coaches who were out there that he was good to go. So that's not my argument. My argument is there's a place for a Marcus Mariota, and it gives you a little bit of a different look inside the 10-yard line or wherever you want to use him. And the other coaches, once they see that package in one game, they have to pay attention to that. And so that causes them concern. Their hours have to be spent also worrying about when John might use a Marcus Mariota. So we'll see what they come up with next year.
Yeah, I'm in complete agreement with you there. But one guy, I think, Brent, on the offensive side of the football, who had just another stellar game, a guy who is, you know, if he's not the best tight end in the NFL, he's as close can be. Darren Waller finishes the night, 5 catches, 112 yards. I'm curious, in your career, and you've seen so much more football than I've ever seen, and you've probably forgotten more football than I'll ever know, but who were the best tight ends that you've had a chance to see in person? Because my God, it feels like Waller is just playing at a level that is otherworldly at the moment.
I'm going to go back before you were even born. And Mike Ditka was one of my all-time heroes. I covered him as a newspaper man when I started in Chicago. And he epitomized the great tight end of that particular era. John Mackey then came along with the Baltimore Colts. They were then still in Baltimore. Those two sort of set the standard. But then as time passed, there were more speedy, big-time tight ends. And I will tell you right now that the tight end at Kansas City, in my mind, is as good as I've ever seen in person. I think Travis Kelce. Now, I love what Darren Waller's doing, and he's a great receiver on the outside. But there's one thing that Kelce does. When they get down inside that 10-yard line, he posts up. Basically, he's like a basketball player underneath the hoop, and you can't move him. He puts that big butt of his, he sticks it back there, and he sets down, and Patrick Mahomes can hit him for the touchdown. I think Travis Kelce is maybe the best all-around tight end that I've ever watched in person. And then you watched Kittle today, who returned for the 49ers, gave them a huge, huge lift. And he's a very, very good open field receiver. I covered him in Iowa. He would rank up there too. And then Darren Waller would be in that group. Darren Waller had an all-pro night tonight. It's unbelievable the number of great tight ends that we have now in the NFL.
Yeah, and it seems like it's a position that's ever evolving. And we've talked to Darren about that over the past, gosh, you know, 6 or so months since the season started, where the tight end position, you're now being asked to do so many things that you weren't necessarily asked to do 5, 10, 15 years ago. But just wrapping it up with Brent Musburger here before we look ahead to Denver and crack a few cold ones and get out of here. And Brent, I'm just going to ask you this. How does this team get Henry Ruggs more involved? Because he is such an explosive playmaker on the outside. He does so many things that I know don't show up on the stat sheet. But at some point, it feels like he has got to start getting his touches.
You know, I've watched a lot of young wide receivers in the league, and people tend to be impatient with them. It's a very, very difficult job when you come to the National Football League. We have to understand that he's blessed with God-given speed, one of the fastest receivers that we've seen at the combine. And when he was at Alabama, he basically would flash that speed and he would be open. He didn't have to work on what he was doing. And he will learn now that basically he's in a fist fight for that first 5 yards coming off the line of scrimmage. He's got to get himself open. He's got to do double moves. He's got to make hard cuts. Obviously, I think he can become a great talent, but I'm not surprised that he's struggling. It is very hard for young receivers. This year, we've got an abundance of them in the league, and Jefferson has done probably the best job of all for the Vikings. Came from LSU, but he didn't rely on his speed at LSU because he was not one of the fastest receivers down there. He worked on his moves, and that's what Ruggs will have to do. They'll have to work with him and teach him when to cut. He'll have to learn how to study defensive backs because each of them is just a little bit different. Aguilar brings that to the party, and he was able to make a couple of big plays on Byron Jones tonight, and he knew he was matched up against out there. So it's a learning experience. It will take time. I would expect Ruggs to make a great leap about 1 month into next season is what I would think. If he works at the offseason, but he'll have to work on moves. He had that straight line speed tonight into the end zone, but there were two guys. You're not going to outrun everybody in the secondary in the NFL like you did at Alabama.
Yeah, no doubt about that. The talent is no question there for Henry Ruggs. I think, like you said, it's just going to take him a little bit of time to get up to speed in the NFL. And you know how fans are, Brent. They want everything now, and it's hard to be patient. But, hey, Brent, we appreciate your time so immensely. So before we get out of here, we look ahead, as I said, to the Denver Broncos in the end of the 2020 season. Crack a few Ice Cold Coors Lights and hit the dusty road. Let's just hear a quick message from our friends at Allegiant.
Touchdown, Las Vegas.
Since starting Allegiant some 20 years ago, we've flown more than 100 million people to be with those they love. We're pilots, flight attendants, and technicians. But we're also parents, spouses, and neighbors. And just like you, we're excited to reconnect with the people and places that matter most. That's why we're going the distance for health and safety, on the ground and in the air. Because the further we go now, the safer it'll be to go farther tomorrow. Allegiant, the official airline of the Las Vegas Raiders. Low fares, nonstop flights, only at Allegiant.com.
An absolute huge monstrous shout out to the legend Brent Musburger for stopping by and hanging out with us for a little bit. And like I said, before we look ahead to the Broncos, before we crack a few ice cold Coors Lights, well, I guess really in this case, since it's just me, because, you know, Brent's an important man, before we crack one single ice cold Coors Light, just a few things that I wanted to talk about, a few things I wanted to touch on that we didn't have a chance to with Brent earlier. Obviously, the main narrative surrounding this game is going to be that final, gosh, what was it, 19 seconds, and for good reason, too. And I'm going to come off as the homer, as biased Eddie, as company man Eddie. And let me be honest. Let's be very straight here for a second. There's no moral victories in the NFL. There's not. There's simply no such thing as the moral victories. And the Raiders are sitting at 7-8, and it's what they've earned at this point. That's what they've done. They have played well enough to earn 7 victories, and they have lost 8 times. And that's just the reality of where we're sitting at. But one thing that, you know, we're going to get caught up. We're going to get lost in that 19 seconds. That's all anyone's going to talk about. It's what the sports shows are going to talk about. When you guys turn on ESPN on Monday morning, $20 says that's what people are still going to be talking about. And I get it. I 100% get it. That was about as heartbreaking, as heart-wrenching, as disappointing, as slam your phone on the ground 19 seconds as you're going to have in professional sports. I get that. But, and Brent and I kind of touched on it earlier. It's so weird, and I want to talk to someone who knows a lot more about football than I do, because I'll be very honest with you guys. I've always been very honest with you guys. I've never fancied myself an X's and O's guru. That's not who I am. That's not who I try to be. I like to talk to people. I like to ask questions of people who know more about that than I do. But coming into that drive, coming into that series, the Raiders' defense, I thought, had played pretty well. They had taken Tua out of the game. And let's not forget about that. And that's another thing that's going to get lost in this too, is the Raiders defense played well enough that Tua Tagovailoa was pulled for the second time this year for Ryan Fitzpatrick. Let's not forget about that. The Raiders defense played well enough to win prior to that 19 seconds. They did what they needed to do. 3 sacks tonight. And I know that the pass rush has been something that has been much maligned this year. I understand that. I've said the same things, but they have done enough. They did enough tonight, I think, really to put themselves in a position to win. And Rod Marinelli, this was the first week that he's had a full week to game plan for a game, a full week to get ready for an opponent. Because let us not forget that last week he had, doing my math here, about 72 hours to get ready for the Chargers. He got that job on a Sunday night, and is expected to put a game plan in together to stop a really, really good Chargers defense in about 3 days. And it didn't work. It did not work. But credit where it is due, as this defense, I feel anyways, took a step forward. And it was, let's be honest, a step that was not good enough to earn a win tonight, but it was a step nonetheless. And speaking of guys that really, I think, put their best foot forward tonight, Derek Carr, 21 to 34, as we said, 336 yards, a touchdown, finishes with a passer rating of 104.5. And you don't have to be a physician to see that DC was not operating at 100% tonight. You don't. The fact that he was able to get out there, that he was able to essentially put together two game-winning drives, really, speaks volumes about who he is, what he is capable of doing, because he was not 100% tonight. And you got to feel for that offense. And look, there are things on this offense that did not work tonight. It is very hard to win in the NFL if you do not complete a third down. The Silver and Black were 0 for 10 on third down tonight. Let me repeat that. They were 0 for 10 on third down. I would be really curious to know the last time a team won a game in the NFL when they did not convert a third down. It is hard to do. And boy, even at halftime, you felt the Raiders were up and you felt that the lead should have been bigger. In fact, we all know that lead should have been bigger. That's just the reality of where we were. The Raiders up 13-6 at the half, should have been up much more. Should have been up much, much more. Going into the fourth quarter, the Raiders are up 16-13. That lead is one that you feel should have been bigger. And unfortunately, it was just not enough. And my biggest question now, headed into week 17 against the Broncos, it feels right now, and we've talked about it so much. We've talked about it. Me and the great KMM have discussed it. I've talked about it with Jason Fitz. It's really become kind of our theme for the past couple weeks. Is the offensive identity now is confusing to me. We knew who this team was on offense for the first part of the year. We knew that. Now, I don't know. I'm unsure of what the mission is, what the thesis is for this Raiders offense. And you hate to say it, but at this point now, officially eliminated from the playoffs with 1 week to go, we're not going to find out what that identity is for 2020. And you know, when the season ends, we'll stop. We'll catch our breath. We'll look back at the season in totality. And I think my guess is, my hunch, when we look back at this season, we will see that the Raiders were at their best when they were a run first, control the line of scrimmage, win time of possession type team. I'm looking at time of possession right now. The Raiders lost it again tonight. By nearly, doing my math, by about 6 minutes, they lost it tonight. And I'm not saying that time of possession is the be-all, end-all in the NFL, but for this team, for your 2020 Raiders, when they are at their best, as I've said, they are a team that needs to win that. And once again tonight, not the case. And it's heartbreaking, man. I understand the frustration. I understand being bummed out, being disappointed, because we're looking at the calendar and a month and a half ago, right before Thanksgiving, we were singing such a different tune. We were singing such a song of joy, of rejoicing. And now we're not singing that. We're looking at another year on the postseason, on the outside looking in, not doing enough to earn a seat in that postseason tournament. And it hurts, man. It hurts. It does not feel good. Oh, I'm looking at the calendar. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Lost 5 of 6 coming down the stretch. That's not going to get it done, ladies and gentlemen. And I'm not telling you anything you don't know. Losing 5 of 6 down the stretch is not going to get it done. And once again in 2020, we see that unfortunately is the case. But in terms of things to be positive about, I don't even want to say positive, because let's be honest, guys. We're sitting here at 7-8, eliminated from the playoffs, and feeling pretty down about ourselves. Unsure of where to turn. Unsure of who to, I don't want to say cast blame on, but unsure of where to kind of direct our frustration. And that's not a fun place to be. It's not. So instead of saying, I'm going to look at the positives, I'm going to look at the bright spots. I'm going to look at things that we can build on headed into 2021. And when you're looking at things that you can build on in 2021, my friends, look no further than number 83, your Pro Bowl tight end, Darren Waller. Because my goodness, what a night. And listen, I trust Brent Musburger. And I told him, you guys heard me say it just a few minutes ago, he has known and forgotten more football than I will likely ever know. And he puts Darren Waller in that top three, top four echelon. And I'll very respectfully, not disagree, but say, I don't know if there is a tight end right now playing better football than Darren Waller. D-Wall finishes his line tonight with 5 catches, 112 yards. And gosh, some of those catches were unreal. Some of those catches were SportsCenter, top 10, top 5, whatever catches. He was incredible again tonight. And he is now in rarefied air in terms of Raiders history, in terms of Raiders lore. According to our friends at Raiders PR, in Raiders history, there are 3 players with at least 90 receptions and 1,000 receiving yards in multiple seasons. Darren Waller is one of them. The other 2, Tim Brown and Todd Christensen. That is very, very, very good company. Darren also tonight set a Raiders record for most receptions in a single season by a tight end, surpassing the aforementioned Todd Christensen's 95 in 1986. D-Wall now only trails Tim Brown in terms of catches in a regular season. And his brand of football right now is exciting. It's fun. We talked to him on the show last week, and he said, look, I have so much room to get better. I feel like I'm a better blocker than I was a year ago. And if there is still room for Darren Waller to get better, oh my goodness, look out. Look out below. Oh my goodness gracious. What a year for him. What a story for Darren. And you just got to root for a guy like that, 100%. And another thing that I think we can take away, another thing we can kind of hang our hat on from tonight, is it felt like we got the best version. Well, maybe not the best version. We got the improved version, the old version of the Raiders run game tonight. They finished tonight north of the 100-yard mark, which was great to see. It feels like it's been some time since we got that. And it feels like we got the old Josh Jacobs back. And I think that I know that we won't really know what was going on with Josh health-wise until after the season ends. But my goodness, it felt good to see number 28 back and doing his thing in a big way. He finishes his night with 13 carries for 69 yards, averaging over 5 yards a carry. And I know that we've been clamoring, you guys have heard it from me, feed Josh, let him eat. And he ate tonight in a big way. And I know, unfortunately, it wasn't enough. But like I said, we're looking for things we can hang our hat on, things that we can be excited about headed into the final week of 2020. And speaking of the final week of 2020, and although technically the game itself will take place in 2021, but the final week of the 2020 regular season, we now turn our attention to the Denver Broncos. And this team, I mean, obviously, guys, playoffs is out of the picture. Officially eliminated from the playoffs, and that hurts, that stings. We've talked about that a lot. We will talk about that more on the show this week, because it's going to be the driving narrative of this team. But one thing that is still on the board, and I know it's really a consolation prize. I know that no one wants to hear this. I know that it's not the real prize that we were after in 2020. And going back to a month and a half ago, if I would have told you that this prize was what we were going to be aiming for in week 17, you would have been disappointed. And trust me, we are all disappointed too. But let us not forget, 8-8, still on the table for this team. And I think that there is something mentally fulfilling about going 500. I think that there is a big difference between going 7-9 and going 8-8. And I know that neither result will result in a trip to the postseason. I get that. So I think that we have to call a spade a spade and realize that even a win next Sunday in Denver will not change the outcome of this season. The Raiders season is going to end next Sunday. Regardless of what happens, regardless of what happens around the league, if the Raiders win by 50, lose by 50, everything breaks their way, the Raiders season will end next Sunday. But I think that it is important just for some momentum headed into the postseason to finish 8-8, to beat a division rival, to get some type of positive feeling back in the building before the players go away for the offseason. That is important. I believe that that is important. I believe head coach John Gruden thinks that that's important. Derek Carr for sure thinks that's important. And the rest of this team knows that while their goals for the season are not going to come to fruition, there is still value in being a 500 football team. And I'm not trying to gloss this over and say that the season is going to be an incredible success if you go 8-8. It's not. Make no mistake about it. The goals for the 2020 Raiders came up short. They were not fulfilled. Right? And like I said, there's nothing that's going to change that. That is what this team has earned. For better or for worse, that is what the 2020 Raiders have earned. And that's disappointing. That's a bummer. I get that. But you also have to be realistic and say, if this team goes 8-8, that is an improvement on last year. It's not a dramatic improvement. It's not the type of improvement that we hoped to see when we started this journey. But it is an improvement nonetheless. And gosh, if you can't get fired up to go to Denver to take on the Broncos, even in a game that doesn't mean a whole heck of a lot in terms of the standings or any of that, I don't know what to tell you, because it is still a rivalry game. It is a game where there's going to be no shortage of bad blood, and it's a game that the Raiders need to win, I think, just to have, like I said, to have some sort of momentum headed into 2021. But we're going to talk about the Broncos. We will talk about them a lot over the next couple days, headed into week 17 and the conclusion of the Raiders' regular season. But before we do that, it's tradition. And guys, we need to crack a few ice cold Coors Light tonight. I don't know if one is going to do it, but we're going to crack some. And it feels like there's numerous ways that we can go tonight. I think that Nelson Aguilar is a great choice. I think Derek Carr is a great choice for getting it out and playing a game when he's not 100%. And really, as we said, doing enough to win a game for the Las Vegas Raiders. But to me, the choice is obvious. The choice is going to be one that probably won't surprise a lot of you. This one's for Darren Waller. Just another incredible night for him. A guy who barely comes off the field, who does everything that he's asked, contributes in the run game, is essentially now this team's de facto number one receiver, and is quickly making himself the argument that Travis Kelce is light years ahead of Darren Waller, I think, is an argument that is losing credence by the day, by the series, by the play. Because Darren Waller, I don't know if there's a tight end in football playing better football than him right now. And unfortunately, so much of it is going to get lost because the team results haven't been there. But guys, do not get it twisted. Darren Waller is an elite tight end. Put the capital E on that. He is a capital E elite tight end, and the future for him is so, so bright, and I cannot wait to see what he has in store in 2021 and beyond. But as I said, the goals for 2020 were not reached, but that was not because of anything that Darren Waller could have done any better. He has been spectacular this year. He is one of the best stories in the NFL. He is one of the best guys in that locker room. He's been so incredibly generous to us with his time. He's a guy that you just have to root for. And the fact that he is a stud, the fact that he is a certified badass every time he goes out on the field, just makes it all the better. So a big shout out to Darren, a big shout out to really this offense as a whole. Room to get better, but man, heartbreaking loss, no matter how you guys slice it. An absolutely heartbreaking loss, but we soldier on. That's all we can do. There's nothing else we can do besides lick our wounds, you know, sit down, reflect, get better. Well, I should say try to get better the next time this team goes out there, because that's what you do. You love this team. That is what you do. So, Freddie Pascal, Engineer Jim, our guest this week, Brent Musburger, and everyone else in Silver and Black Productions who helps get our little program from A to Z, we thank you deeply, humbly, and oh so sincerely, and we will catch you guys next week for our final regular season edition of Upon Further Review.
Thanks for listening to this edition of Upon Further Review, presented by Coors Light on the official Raiders Podcast Network.